I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
From MCIE.
Inclusive education benefits all learners. And if you want to hear why, stick around. You're not going to want to miss this conversation. My name is Tim Villegas from the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education, and you are listening to Think Inclusive, a show where with every conversation we try to build bridges between families, educators, and disability justice advocates to create a shared understanding of inclusive education and what inclusion looks like in the real world. You can learn more about who we are and what we do at mcie.org. I am on vacation for much of June, so I'm recording a few intros and outros from one of my favorite places, Circle of Friends Coffee Shop in Woodstock. So pardon the background noise. Colleen Tomko is a parent and advocate for inclusion, a Penn State graduate, a graduate of Partners in Policymaking, and president of Kids Together, Inc., an all-volunteer, unfunded nonprofit. Colleen Tomko believes that all students should have the opportunity to learn and grow in an inclusive environment. She has seen firsthand the benefits of inclusion for her son, Sean, who has a disability. Sean has been fully included throughout his education. He also uses a communication device and other technology. Here is what we cover in today's episode: why inclusion is important for all students, regardless of their abilities. That advocacy is essential for ensuring that all students have access to an inclusive education. And that everyone has a role to play in creating an inclusive society. Before we dive into today's fantastic interview, I've got a question for you. Have you ever felt like you're losing touch with the people in your life, but you don't want to be glued to social media all the time just to get updates? Well, fret no more, because I've got the perfect solution for you. Together Letters. It's a fantastic tool that can bring you closer to your loved ones. How does it work? It's simple. Together Letters is a group email newsletter that gathers updates from all its members and combines them into a single, easy-to-read newsletter for everyone. No fancy apps or complicated platforms needed, just good old email. We even use Together Letters to keep our Think Inclusive patrons connected with each other. Plus, here's the best part, groups of 10 or less can use it for free. So why wait? Head over to togetherletters.com and sign up right now. Reconnect with your favorite people, because Together Letters has got your back. And now, my interview with Colleen Tomko. So first of all, hello, nice to meet you.
And you?
I feel like we've been trying to set this up for a long time, so I'm glad that we finally connected. Yeah. And so I know you, or I know of your work, through Kids Together. So why don't we start there? You know, why did you start Kids Together? You know, and how does that connect with the cartoons and the parent side and everything? So give me a little bit of background on that.
Okay, so basically, it goes way back to my growing up. I grew up knowing people with disabilities that did everyday things. And so my mom had, I just want to go over a couple of those because this is what led to what I do.
Yeah.
So my mom had her own tax and accounting office, and she met a man named Daryl, and she needed to get copies made for her business. And he used the wheelchair and had limited hand movement. And she befriended him and then realized like that he couldn't get out and stuff. And she helped him get an adapted van. And so then we ended up like just knowing Daryl, he'd come to our house and hang out and go to picnics and just do stuff with us. And he was just a friend of the family. And then my grandmother had a friend and her name was Frances. And she would go to bingo with her or come over and watch TV with her and that. And so I just grew up that, you know, Frances' speech was a, her speech was a little bit slow and odd. And then she might need help like dialing the phone or counting her money or something like that. And someone would just say, oh, Frances needs help, and somebody would help her. And it was just the way that I knew that things were done. And then my mom was taking a class at the community college, and she met a lady named Lexi in her class who was using a power chair, and found out that Lexi lived right down the road from us. And so then she ended up like driving her power chair down to her house. And then my parents would put up a wooden ramp, like a, you know, plywood, and she would come in and they and drink wine and laugh and everything like that. So my perspective growing up was that, you know, we didn't call people by disability terms. We didn't like say something negative or think that they shouldn't be there. I just assumed that people with disabilities were part of what everybody else did, and that they just, you know, that I knew that they ran a business, they went to college, they went to bingo, they had friends, and people just helped them out. And we didn't use the terms, like I didn't know until I was an adult that Daryl had quadriplegia from a diving accident. I never even thought of Frances as having an intellectual disability. I was like 30, 40 years old until I reflected on that. I was like, oh my gosh, I like just didn't even, you know, it wasn't a question. And Lexi had cerebral palsy, and I'm still friends with Lexi. And so when Sean was born, I probably came into this whole scenario as a different perspective from most people, because I thought people with disabilities were always fully included and stuff. And so when we decided to like go, you know, he's old enough, we want him to go to preschool or something. I mean, we knew he had disabilities, but I didn't think it would be so hard to get him in stuff. So then when we approached like a preschool, then that was when it started, like, you know, there's places for people like him. He needs to go somewhere else. And that was like a theme throughout his whole life. There's places for him. He has to go somewhere else. So we looked at these other places, and they weren't learning through play or child stuff. It was like all therapy and rigid. And I was like, I don't want that for him. And I found a place that was, it was called reverse mainstreaming. It was the best I could do, but at least they learned through play, and there were kids without disabilities with them. So when I grew up, I just thought there weren't a lot of people with disabilities. So I didn't know everything was segregated. So that to me was my motivation. I'm like, here I am, Sean. I'm just expecting we're just going to accommodate him and have the life, you know, like anybody else. And then to me, that was a big shock. So we got him in this early childhood school that had the reverse mainstreaming. At least he did playing, and there were kids without disabilities in the class. And then I started realizing like this is going to be a fight for the rest of his life. Like it hit me like a brick wall. So I started going to advocacy stuff, and I went to C2P2, the Partners in Policy Making for Pennsylvania. And then I hooked up with other parents, and we decided to start doing Kids Together to help promote, you know, that people should just be part of the community and be included. So the fest, and then all, at the same time, while I was taking the classes, I doodle. I've doodled my whole life. That's what I do. So we're in these classes learning about the history of disability and rights and all that. And I'm getting mad because I didn't know it was such a struggle. And I just draw all these things out. And then everybody else was saying like, hey, you need to put these on t-shirts or, you know, mugs and stuff like that, because you're just capturing like what we're all feeling. And that, so to me, it was like therapy. I really never made it a business, like, but everybody wanted it. So I just kept drawing, and it helped me put things in perspective. And then we also started the Kids Together. It was like a large kids festival, and the purpose was to promote inclusion in the community in ways that we didn't think were happening. Or like once your eyes were opened up and you saw, you know, there's steps everywhere. There's people are told to go somewhere else. There's all these barriers. So the Kids Together Festival was just supposed to be like, you know, it was really built to just educate the public and to model for people in the community So we had people with disabilities participating in it. We had people with disabilities as performers. We had adapted material. So like kids would do art projects, but we had adaptations. So it was universally designed. You could use the large grab handle, or you could just use the small paintbrush. And we tried to just model like this is not a big deal to have welcome everybody. And then we also did like, I call it propaganda. Like, so we had like signs up, like, you know, like IDEA allows kids with disabilities. Like we just put them all around the festival. So like people were just being bombarded while they were there having fun and seeing it and reading it. And then we also gave out materials and we had booths. So we would have like a booth from maybe somebody that helps employment for people with disabilities, but it would be next to like the hospital that's doing blood pressure. We didn't want anything to promote like anything was different. We wanted to just model it for everybody that people, this can be done and people should be together and it's not a big deal. And it was really, really successful, but it was really, really a lot of work.
Oh, yeah. So a question about that. When did you, like, how many years did you do that in a row?
Yeah, we did it for about 5 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And people were sad when it stopped. But then Sean was getting older and I had the battle hit in school. Because people go like, oh, it must be hard having Sean. No, it's the battles I have to fight for him that are hard. Like, he's really easy. He's fun. He's entertaining. And it's just that. So that I had to like make him a priority, even everything I do for Sean is bigger than him. I would never just say, oh, this has to be for him. It has to be systemic wide. I don't like focus just on him, but I have to get him first. So, and then at that also we foster adopted at that time. So it was just, and then he ended up having behavior issues. So it was very difficult to deal with the schools and fighting for, you know, the IEPs and getting services for both of them. And that just became more time consuming, very time consuming.
Yeah. So Sean was included. It's Sean, right?
Yes.
So Sean was included from like kindergarten through.
Sean was fully included. Sean was fully included from kindergarten. I went to the school a year ahead of time and said, he's coming. You got to get ready. And they didn't take me serious. And that's one of my cartoons, like, you know, registration. They asked, can you hop or run? Will he sit still? He's not able to walk. So like they weren't inclusive questions, even though apply to go to kindergarten. And then we had to have a meeting with like 25 people telling us that he should go somewhere else. And, you know, and we just stuck because I had the training. I had like all the policies and laws and precedents from court cases. I was ready. And they had 25 people to convince us that he needed to go somewhere else. And we stood our ground. But the first notice of recommended placement said the reason was because the parents demanded it. No. So I knew we weren't off to a great start. And that's why that became like a full-time job. And really, it's not, Sean's not that hard. The job was fighting to get his needs met, but not him. He's easy.
Where do they want to send him?
Well, of course, in Pennsylvania, we have intermediate units. So they have rooms for categories of disabilities. So he was going to be in the nonverbal communication, which I went and looked at. And I just said to them, like, so I literally asked them. I said, so you want us to send him out of our community into a class with kids that don't communicate to learn to communicate? Like, and I didn't have an answer. I did get snarky over time because it just seemed like all this is ridiculous, some of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. So
I mean, part I can tell you too is that Sean, I know one of the questions, and I'm probably jumping around, but
please jump around.
Sean went through all of his education, was exposed to all the things that everybody else was exposed to. He read Catcher in the Rye, The Five People You Meet in Heaven, and all that. I don't know how much any kids understand of it, you know? So we had it in there. He could ask leading questions. He could participate. He, you know, studied the history, the stock markets. You know, most of us don't remember very much of what we learned in school, but he was part of it. And by the time he was in high school, the people that were the best with him were his peers. We had we did a maps and a path. He had a circle of friends. By the time he got into high school, like the kids just took over doing stuff for him. So they came to the inclusion specialist. Sean had somebody that would get the lessons ahead of time, look at the schedule, and then put the adaptations or accommodations that he needed. So whoever was working with him knew what his goals were, what it would look like. And, you know, it was just, it became matter of fact, where then teachers didn't even need somebody to help them because they just were like, oh, when we do this, this is what Sean does and that's his goal and this is what it looks like. So, but by junior year of high school, his peers just went to that inclusion person. She came in like 2 half days a week and they said, oh, well, we're going to the prom and Sean has to go. And then she told me, and I was like, oh, I wasn't ready for this. I was thinking senior year, but they were like, the kids took over and they said, we have to go and make sure the building's accessible. We have to make sure that the DJ will play Elvis because that's his favorite movie, music. We have to make sure there's food that he can eat and that, you know, the aide can come and you know, and they worked it all out. Boy, I just said, what happens at the prom stays at the prom. He had 2 dates. We got a limo and he came back smiling, let me tell you. And then the next year, he went to this, it was just, he's going to the prom. It's just a matter of fact now. So they just, everybody just repeated it. And I really don't know exactly what happened, but I know he had fun. He had a different date that year. And then after that, my favorite story about Sean's inclusion is when he was going to high school graduation, typical years, they would walk in across the football field to their seats. And Sean usually needs to hold on to someone to walk. But for graduation, we were trying to help him learn, be able to do as much independently, you know, because it was like a proud moment and all that, or have a peer help him. But he really wanted to walk on his own. So we had, they changed the whole graduation. Instead of walking across the field, they walked on the track where, you know, for the running, racing. And then that's smooth and it has straight lines. Now on the football field, it's not smooth. And the lines, he thinks that they're steps. So every yard line, he would have to stop. And, you know, on the racetrack, the running track, he could just go straight down. So he walked down the running path on his own for graduation in the lineup with everybody else, which was pretty cool because, you know, but when he was young, one of the reasons they told us, you know, one of many reasons they told us he couldn't be included was they used to use the phrase, the gap is only going to get larger. And so when he's at graduation, he's in a line and he is slower. So there's kids in front of him and they're moving and there's kids in back of him and he's holding them up. And yeah, the gap is getting wider right at that moment. But the entire stadium is cheering, go Sean, go Sean. So at that point, I knew that the path we took was absolutely the right way. Everybody there knew him. It wasn't a problem that there was a space or he was holding anybody up and everybody was cheering him on. And I just thought if he wasn't included throughout school with those peers and the people in the community that knew him, nobody ever would have known him, like at all. And he wouldn't have had any of those experiences. So, but then he went on from getting, oh, and then the next, that day, the press was there too. And that was, this was just, his graduation was awesome. The press was there and they took a picture. And then the next day, it said, the headline says, you know, students from Palisades graduate. And it's Sean standing there getting his diploma. And the article is just about graduation. It doesn't say anything about disability. It was just like this. He's just here and he graduated like everybody else.
Right. And everything's normal.
Yeah. So I was like, man, we nailed it.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Because of Sean's experience in school, how did that affect other families who wanted the same thing? I mean, did it affect families that wanted the same thing?
Yeah, we all, like I like to tell people is like, if I came to a meeting with another family, then they were like, well, see, Sean and I, we were connected with the legislators and with the people at the state offices. We testified in Congress. I was on all the, you know, committees and that. So if other families were seeking to get their kids included and I went to a meeting with them, then things would happen. But the families that we weren't connected with, they got steered still into the segregated. And sadly, like after, so, I mean, I went through a lot to get Sean included. I was on the strategic planning committee and I was on all these things. And like I said, I went to Congress and all that. And then, so Jesse, his younger brother, comes up a few years later and it was like the door shut. I had to start all over. And I thought, like, they know I'm not going to, I'm persistent, you know, but they still were like, we're not going to do the things he needs. And so I think the door closes behind us really quickly. And that's kind of scary. I mean, you could do all that work. I think some of it is because, you know, staff overturns, the system just does what the system does. And, you know, it's really difficult. I think we can do all this training and help people and make a difference for one kid. But unless we change the entire system, it's just going to keep going back.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Parentside cartoons, how many did you make?
A lot. And they're not even all in the store. But I'll tell you what, most of them are from my I put that on the website that I have, but they were from my real experiences. Mm-hmm. Like one time they were doing, I don't know if they were doing a field trip to look at the middle school or something. And Sean's cord for his communication device, I realized it was at home. And I took it down to drop it off in the class, knowing that they were doing this field trip, whatever it was. And there's Sean in the room with the eight. And I said, why isn't he on the trip with everybody else? And then that was one of the answers I got. Well, when we said everyone was going on the trip, we didn't mean Sean. And that's why I threw the bus, like No Child Left Behind and all that. Like they only did stuff like that once because they knew that I was going to be on it from then on. But I had to like literally clarify everything so that miscommunication didn't happen. And in second grade, Sean was really had a teacher that was really abusive. And in a somewhat comforting way, she was abusive to all the kids. I don't know. That's warped. But she would like hold him down and write these notes. Like, you know, he's physically not able to hold papers. And she'd say he dropped them. So she had to hold them down on the floor. And she, when I finally got through to her one time, she said her goal was to prove, she wanted him in her class so she could prove that kids with disabilities didn't belong. So that cartoon, then I found out later, she ended up having a brain tumor. And I didn't know how to draw that in a cartoon, so I drew it like a car accident. I just said one moment, you know, kids don't belong in my class, that. And the next moment, I show like a car hitting the teacher coming out the door. And then the third panel, I have her in a wheelchair saying, I have a right to teach. I shouldn't be discriminated against, because that's literally what happened. So my cartoons are not like something I just like fantasize it. It's like based on something that happened.
Oh, my goodness.
And then it helps me see like the whole picture like this. And then because I like even now I'm like throwing words at you and I know I talk fast and stuff. But like if I put it in a picture and I really capture it, I think that helps people understand it easier.
Do you have all the you said you don't have all the cartoons on the website or do you?
No, I have the Parentside site. And I have a lot on there. And I have like ones I let people call. I'm probably just going to end up I don't make any money at all, like zero. So I don't even know what I'm going to do with them. I just thought like it was a release. And then people said, put it on the store. And sometimes people buy a couple things. I might make a dollar or something. That's about it. So I'm not sure. But I even have ones that I started sketching in like filing cabinet and things like that, because it's just when I get upset or mad, that's how I.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
Get it.
So
if you go under the parentside.com and then go under IEPs, that's where the controversial ones are.
Let me just look here. We'll definitely put all this stuff in the show notes and the these are all designs.
You have to go probably under the IEP one.
Mm-hmm. Parentside online store.
So even like the one I have like the steps going up, it says welcome all kids. There's schools around it that are like that. You know, and you're just like, well, hello.
I know, right? Well,
but I also worked with Arcadia Inclusion Institute for 5 years doing this with the teams of teachers and district administration. And they would come to the Summer Institute at the university. Mm-hmm. And then we would be planning and help them with the mission for inclusion. And then they would have like teams and go back. And I would read their journals and we would have presenters and so I got a lot of the teacher administrator perspective. Like I kind of get where they're coming from and they're not all evil. They're all, like, you know, they're like stuck in this system too. And
exactly. Then I did,
you know, and then I did include me from the start, which then I worked directly with kids in the classroom and the teams and the parents, you know, and I really think that 90% of the issue is miscommunication. People don't really say what they mean and they don't hear. And they don't listen to each other. And I think that that is part of it is resolvable, but a lot of it is still systemic. We had to, we shouldn't have special education should just be general ed. And then special education is an add-on. It shouldn't be a separate, like you should be in general ed and you get special ed services, period. Like nobody's a special ed student. Everybody is just a student.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple things that popped up. Include me from the start. So are you, how are you involved with Include Me from the Start?
I was a coordinator for for like 4, 5, 6 years. I don't remember anymore. But then, you know, everything happened, and I kind of, my younger son had a lot of behavioral issues, so I kind of put that back, go back on the back burner again.
Now I forget that second part. I think it was, what were we just talking about before that? You were talking about, hold on, it's going to come to me. Oh, general ed and special ed being two. Okay. And misunderstandings. So I was just on this panel at Georgia State University, and there was a director of special education on the panel. And something she said was like exactly that, like the understanding that services are portable and that there's really only one kind of student. And it's like, it's amazing how many people don't understand that are in that role.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So like, where's the breakdown in miscommunication? Because you, like, if you read the law, and I know you read, I know you've read the law.
Yeah, I'm the trained. One that reads all those fine
print. Right. I mean, it says it in the law.
Yeah.
So where is the breakdown for people? Because like you said, I don't think there's the majority of people in school districts come to work thinking they're like, okay, we're going to exclude kids today. You know, that's not their mindset.
And they don't even know they can ask.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then I had a scenario where I helped the teacher and I did a video for their school. I'm not at liberty to, you know, whatever. But so I helped this teacher. I did a video of how great I came in and helped her with this little girl. And here's suggestions to help her be included more successfully. And she just embedded them in the class and they helped everybody. So I made a video of it because I was like, this teacher is awesome. She implemented, this kid is happy. Everybody's happy. What a great thing. We showed that to the school at like assembly or whatever, a work meeting, whatever. And after that, she came to me and said, I really wish you wouldn't have shown that because the rest of the staff are now mad at her because they thought it was going to increase the expectations. I was like kind of floored by that.
But
so some of it is like they don't know, but then they also, the culture is this is what we do.
Right.
And I guess maybe they're not taught it in college or when they're getting their degrees. And so then they get in. But even those that have this, they come into it and they seem like they're going to be inclusive and real, you know, diverse. They get into that culture and they just change. It changes them.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's hard. I went to, for my teacher training, I went to a very inclusively minded program. And so when I got into education and I got my first job, I was very surprised at how not inclusive the school district was. When I first started, I was skeptical that inclusion worked, but it wasn't until I saw it work that I was like, oh, of course it works. And then I was able to, you know, advocate for my students and stuff like that going through my career. But even when people saw it work, even with my students, that didn't necessarily convince them.
No, right.
So I don't know. It really, well, you said it before about the system needing to change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think some teachers don't, and I used to, so we had a vision statement for Sean and we read it the same thing. It would change as he got older, the beginning of every IEP meeting. So if you're going to suggest something that doesn't lead to something in his vision, we're not doing it. You're not pulling him out to teach him soccer from reading because soccer player is not in his vision. That's like, I would literally say this. So we just got them on board, but they were always afraid to speak up. I had to say I would ask like, you know, can we do this? And they were afraid to speak up. So I'd have to say like, what is it that you need? Like, do you not know how to implement his AAC in the class? Do you need somebody else because it's too much work? I would just like break it down. They were intimidated to say that they couldn't, that they weren't the teachers that knew everything. And I was like, you know, so either like, you know, you have to admit that you need help or support or t- technology or whatever it is you need and then get that to make it successful, you know, or you're just going to be harming the student, which you got into teaching to teach students. So like, you know, like you can't be like this really good teacher that doesn't speak up when you need help. Then I think you're in the wrong field. I would just say that at the meetings. I usually got them to speak up because that's how we got a lot of services in there. I was like, you know, if you don't know how to do it, that's fine. I'm not looking at you as a lesser teacher or professional because Sean's complicated. I mean, who's going to understand his adapted sign language and all the things that he needs in his technology? I don't expect anybody to, but I do expect you to give it an effort and to figure it out and to ask for the help. So I would kind of like, I was just really persistent, but I don't think a lot of people will do that.
Well, I guess that was one of my questions is that I think you found success doing and advocating the way that you did, right?
Yeah.
But not everyone is able to, for whatever reason, advocate like you. So I wonder if that's the reason why people, even though they may have a vision for their child to be included, that they're not as successful.
I will say, and I've said this at trainings because I'll go out, I'll say that fighting for Sean to be including and advocating for him was literally one of the most difficult things I've done in my life. And like I'll say it a million times, it's not about him. It's the people that look at him as lesser and aren't willing to support him or even be abusive or whatever. Like all that is heart-wrenching. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of barriers. But for me, I had the skills, the training, the emotional stability, whatever, all that to be able to keep coming back. And a lot of people don't have that. I mean, I had, you know, support people. Like I had a tribe. I call it my other families from Partners in Policy. I had, you know, just a lot of things, a lot of family support. And, but, you know, but again, in my case, it was worth it. And I would do it again because the outcomes were beyond incredible.
So let's talk a little bit more about outcomes. So Sean is out of school now. What is he doing right now?
Well, he left graduation and that was also a big fight. But then he went on, he did 4 years of working on his IEP goals at Lehigh University. And he literally said on his communication device when we were having a meeting, I go Lehigh. And I was like, you want to go Lehigh? Yes. So I said, well, then we're going to figure that out. And the school district wanted him to leave and again, go to an IU class to learn like filing or something. And I had to be like, he's been included his whole life. And you know, this is like we don't back down. You want me to put him on a bus to another community an hour away to learn something that's not, you know. And so what we did was we went to Lehigh University and talked to some of the staff there. They at that time had a program that supported teachers learning about inclusive education and that. And they were willing to create a program for Sean to audit the classes and work on his IEP goals on campus. So he did that for 4 years. So he just went to college like everybody else. I mean, he didn't go to get the credits and all that, but he had that experience. So that was really awesome. And then after that, well, we couldn't get him in a waiver. So there was no services then. Then I was like, I'll be damned if I'm going through all this and he's going to sit at home, you know? So then I said, go to the state, the county and up the chain and argue with everybody. I could not get him in the consolidated waiver, which is the waiver he technically should have been in. We found a way to get him in what was at that time called the independence waiver. It was really for people who weren't with physical needs. So I was like, we'll just play the game. We just made his physical needs the priority. And, you know, because you can't, like I always said, with somebody who's nonverbal, you don't know, you can't use a standardized test and you don't know what they know or what they're not able to respond to or say or what they don't have the vocabulary for. So I can always argue his physical needs are first. So we ended up getting him in that independence waiver, but that took some time. I just remember one time they wanted to get him in like a personal waiver. They suggested like $30,000 a year or something like that. And again, I'm snarky. I'm just like, oh, sign him up for abuse. Cause what are we going to get for $30,000 a year? Like, you're not going to be able to. So anyway, now he has this, he's in the community health waiver. They changed it into that. And so he has 28 hours of employment and community-based. Sorry, I thought I turned these alerts off. Let me see if I can make that stop. Oh, did I? Okay, I thought I lost you.
No, I'm here.
So now he has 28 hours of home and community and employment. So he is working part-time at a law firm And so he goes 2 hours a week, and he does have an aide that supports him. He's able to do much of the job independently, and they pay him like $9 an hour. And yeah, it's only 2 hours a week, but he's got a paycheck. He talks about working. He gets dressed up. He's got a desk there. You know, he was doing volunteering at the library, but COVID kind of stopped it for everybody. But he's like a superstar at the library. He goes in there. He just got like this birthday card with like 50 million signatures. Everybody was wishing him a happy birthday. So he goes in there and he's like the guru of all the DVDs and stuff. And everybody seems to know him. And then he goes to Good Shepherd. It's a rehab center, but they have like an adaptive gym. I would like to work on getting all the YMCAs to have accessible equipment, but that's a whole nother. But he can go there and they have like a, you know, power assist bike he can use. And then you can adjust, like when you're doing the arm lifts and that, you can adjust it for your limited range of motion and things like that. And so he goes there twice a week. And then he just tells the aide, he just gets on his device and says, you know, I want to go shopping. I want to do whatever. So I tell people when they meet him, I'm like, he's the boss. He's in charge of his care and he's in charge of what he's doing. And then, so if they like laugh at that or scoff, then it's like, you know, okay, well then this is not a person that I want working with them. Like they have to understand that. So he is a really good aide right now. We're fortunate because with the shortages and stuff.
Right. I know. Yeah. It's bad.
We're not able to get home care because nobody's willing to do that. We have hours allocated, but we can't get that. And we had like, you know, really bad, somebody almost killed them and stuff. So I'm really weary about the people, the quality of the people that do home care. That terrifies me as like what's going to happen when we're not around and like for his personal care.
Mm-hmm.
People are just not really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thinking about our audience, which is mostly educators, right, what's one thing that you want them to know, like from leaving this conversation?
Okay, so I was thinking about this last night. I think a big barrier is that everyone doesn't define inclusion the same.
Mm.
So, if people think, well, inclusion is they're in the room and we tried it, it's not working, you know. And in my book, this is my opinion, inclusion is only something to achieve. It's not like something it's not a moment. It's this idea. To me, it's not something that doesn't work or works, it doesn't work. It's only achieved when the student is in the class, when they're an active participant, when they have a sense of belonging, when they're getting the supports and services they need, and they're working on their individual goals, and they're in the places and with the peers they would be if they didn't have a disability. Now, that's a whole big mouthful to say, but I'm like, that is inclusion. And we kind of just, I think the term is also hijacked. So now, when you say inclusion, nobody thinks of all those conditions that I think are inclusion. And I don't know, somehow we have to change our language because the word inclusion is hijacked. People in segregated settings use the word inclusion. They use, well, kids are included. No, they're not. But they say that, you know, and they say, well, they take them out in the community or something. Or they say they have a quality of life. So all of the terms that we use, I think they're being hijacked. And also in politics, too, like inclusion is like, now like a red flag for some people that are like political zealots and that. So I think we got to get away from the terms and really just describe, you know, what it is. What are we looking for? What is the goal? We want kids in there. We want them successful. This is what success looks like.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
It terrifies me that the terms are hijacked. I was like on this group and, you know, they were fighting for in Pennsylvania. We still have some institutions open. And the one mom is like saying like what we say about inclusion for the institution, like Woodhaven, because they're involved and they have a community and they're included. And I'm like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that idea. I don't know if I've heard it put quite that way, that it's not a thing that is either you can do it right or wrong. It's just that you've met conditions.
Yeah, that's how, you know? I view it.
Yeah, so I like that.
When I tell people, like, I'll say, like, I'm going to tell you my definition of inclusion, and this is the only right one, whether you agree or not. So just take it, and that's it. I don't know how else to get, like, if I'm presenting to teachers, I'm like, you have to have a common understanding of what it means. Yeah. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I was just like trying to say this, you know, you have to.
Well, no, I think you do need a common understanding of what it is because, well, and when we're working with school districts, that's one of the first things we do is we call it a shared understanding of inclusive practices because, you know, if someone thinks that you can be included and still have segregated settings or like it's okay, like we're just going to have these segregated settings and a family can choose that and that's okay,
yeah,
you know, and that's inclusion, that's not what we mean.
Right.
Yeah.
And then use choice as the guise of like, you know, oh, that's...
Right. A choice, but it's not really a choice.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And you're like, well, here's where, I mean, and they said that to us with Sean a lot. Like, if you go here, he's going to get the therapy needs. He's going to get, you know, the strategies and all that. And I'm like, great. Write them all down. Bring him over here where he's going to school.
Yeah. Yeah.
I find myself when I never had to go to due process. I literally just talked them to death.
That is interesting.
Sean was the first with his amount of needs to be included in our school district, and they really did not want him. And
can I ask what school district?
Palisades.
Palisades. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know one of the questions you asked was about why I thought inclusion was so important.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Why is inclusive education important to you? Yeah.
And because I wanted to bring that around that I, beyond like, you know, quality of life and being that, I think it's a civil rights issue first. I mean, like, who wants to just be excluded because of something innate of who you are? Or, but, you know, and I just think that when kids are included, then it's showing everybody that everybody is valued and has equal worth and that, you know, that they have a right to have their needs met just like anyone else. And, you know, and I just grew up with that, like with my family, like civil rights are really important. So I just think that, you know, you're denying someone their right. And when they're included, then they have high, I know for a fact they have higher expectations. like the thing when Sean was, people were like trying to get him to do like goofy, stupid things. And I'd be like, you know, when he was in class, when he was in, when he was in that preschool and that, then they wanted to, it was like I said, it was kind of inclusive, but it was reverse mainstreaming. Mm-hmm. So Sean wanted to learn his letters. Like he was taking letters out of a can and holding them up like P and then putting it with the purse and all that. He was like 3 or 4. He was really young doing that. Nobody ever his whole life really worked on reading with him. He just learned it himself, really. But anyway, he was doing that. And they said, though, we can't start doing letters because the rest of the class isn't there. And I always remember that. Like, so if you're in the regular ed class, I don't think they're going to say like, Johnny can't learn about this because everybody else isn't caught up with them. But it was like, you know, I just know that the expectations are a lot higher and he could do whatever level anybody can do, whatever they can do in the regular ed class. And like that whole thing with there's no harm. And so if Sean's exposed to learning about the stock market or learning about Egypt and that, and you're not sure what he gets, like what's the harm? Like there is no harm. But if he never got to sit with his peers and ask questions and participate and was always excluded, that is great harm. Who wants to have that kind of life? And then when you leave school, like now he's like I said, he goes to the library. People know him. People come up to him. I don't even know who they are. And I say hi to him and they leave. And I'm like, who the heck was that? You know, but nobody would know him if he had not been included. And, you know, and the peers that knew him now are, you know, running their own businesses and doing, you know, becoming doctors and all that. And they're more accepting of people with disabilities in their life because they knew Sean. They all know what a communication device is. They all know, you know, how to assist somebody or how to be respectful. They know that because they grew up knowing Sean. And, you know, that wouldn't have happened. So that's why I think inclusion is just so very, it's important, not just to the people, kids with disabilities, but to everybody, to society. Because a student, when Sean was in the classroom, what I always said is like, he was the gauge of that teacher. If they were able to successfully include Sean, good teaching is good teaching. Then they were teaching all the kids well. And you know, I just thought, you know, you're doing it, you're a good teacher. Because like on any given day, there's going to be a kid that doesn't get a lesson, doesn't think that way, you know, is sick or has a broken arm. Or, so there's always going to be something where not every kid can do a lesson the way you prepared it. And if you're prepared to adapt that for whatever comes because of one student in your room with a need, then you're prepared for all the students. That's the way I see it.
Colleen Tomko, thank you so much for spending some time with us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Think Inclusive is written, edited, and sound designed by Tim Villegas and is a production of MCIE. Original music by Miles Kredich. Attention school leaders, did you know that you can team up with the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education to promote inclusive practices in your school or district, regardless of your location? MCIE has partners in Maryland, Illinois, Virginia, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and more joining us in this work. Our goal is to expand partnerships in every state in the U.S. and beyond. The first step is to start a conversation with us. Visit our contact page at mcie.org/contact and let us know that you want to transform your educational services to be inclusive of all learners. Also, please mention Think Inclusive in your message to let us know how you found out about MCIE. We can't wait to hear from you. A special thanks to our patrons, Melissa H., Joyner E., Pamela P., Mark C., Kathy B., Kathleen T., Jarrett T., Gabby M., Aaron P., Paula W., and Carol Q. for their support of Think Inclusive. Thanks for your time and attention, and remember, inclusion always works.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.